Most of us know about Helen Keller and have read books and seen films about the deaf-blind young woman whom Ann Sullivan taught to speak. By most recent accounts, she was the first such handicapped person to learn the use of language. Not so, insists Ernest Freeberg in his book, The Education of Laura Bridgman.
Most are familiar with the story of Helen Keller, the deaf and blind girl rescued through the patient and inspired teaching of Annie Sullivan. But few realize that Keller was not the first deaf and blind person to learn language. In fact, when the public first heard about Keller in the late 19th century, she was hailed as a second Laura Bridgman. Born in New Hampshire in 1829, Laura Bridgman was 2 years old when scarlet fever destroyed her eyes and ears. She was left eager to communicate, but desperately isolated by her condition. When she was 7, the charismatic reformer Samuel Gridley Howe persuaded her parents to bring the child to Boston so he could try an unprecedented educational experiment. He began by giving Laura simple objects, a spoon and a pen, to which he'd attached paper labels printed with raised letters. Laura soon learned to match the labels with their objects. Howe then cut the labels into their component letters, and Laura eventually learned to put these together. At first, she spelled out these words mechanically, but finally she realized the mysterious power of the raised letters at her fingertips, the power of naming things. The truth began to flash upon her, Howe proclaimed. As she eagerly mastered the alphabet, Bridgman was brought into the family of human communication. She became an eager student, desperate to learn words that would allow her to grasp a world she could not see or hear, but only feel. Laura's story of intellectual resurrection fascinated the public. Thousands came to see her, while intellectuals around the world praised Howe as one of the great humanitarians of his day. But Howe had even bigger plans for Laura. The child's tragic condition, he argued, could help resolve some ancient questions about human nature. Laura had almost no external environment, he argued. So as she learned to communicate, what would come out of her would be pure human nature. In his hands, Laura's case would finally explain how much of human character is innate and how much is determined by our environment. As a liberal Unitarian, Howe wanted to use Laura to prove that human nature is essentially good. He told the public that his famous pupil was naturally curious and instinctively kind and honest. Hoping to show that humans are even born with an innate desire to know and love God, he purposely shielded Laura from any information about religion. He predicted that she would come to know God on her own, following the natural dictates of her mind, without any guidance from the Bible. Calvinists in Boston soon realized that Howe was using Laura to attack their faith, their belief that humans are born sinful, needing God's revelation to save themselves from hell. The Calvinists denounced Howe for experimenting with Laura's immortal soul. And when they had the chance, they spoiled his project by sneaking into his school and giving her a crash course of Sunday school lessons. Howe considered this disruption of his experiment to be the greatest disappointment of his life. Today we still wonder about the relative power of nature and nurture in shaping human nature, but Howe's dream of settling that question through a scientific experiment into the nature of Laura Bridgman's soul was uniquely a product of his own time and place. That may be one reason why most people have never heard of Laura Bridgman, the first deaf and blind person ever to learn language.
You've been listening to Ernest Freeberg, professor of humanities at Colby Sawyer College and author of The Education of Laura Bridgman.